The first lecture is what is different about MKs. The second lecture takes the subject factors in the third culture which make re-entry difficult for an MK. And then the third lecture will be more related to factors in the home country which make re-entry difficult for a missionary child, under the title "I Was a Stranger and You Took Me In and You Invited Me In." Now, by way of introduction, these three lectures on missionary kids, MKs, are an attempt to introduce you to an area of social concern which not many people in Australian assemblies have studied. These lectures are not closely researched material. I have garnered the researches of others and collated their conclusions into what I hope will be informative, stimulating, and even interesting material for your study. It may provide for those of you who are sociologists, educators, missiologists, and church leaders a framework of reference for more specialized researches. I myself have been enlightened by sociologists such as Dr. Cohen, Dr. Yuseem, Dr. Danielson, Dr. Ted Ward, and Debbie Bagshaw. I've also listened to tape-recorded lectures given to a conference convened in Manila. This was last year. It was attended by over 300 American missionary educators, sociologists, and medical doctors who pooled their information in a seminar lasting for a week. Now, that may convince you that there is a lot of material to be studied, and spending just three lectures on it is not going to cover the whole need by any means. This is the third type of audience that I have addressed on the subject of the missionary child. The first was at general missionary meetings in Melbourne and Sydney back in 1980. The second was especially for missionary parents on the mission field, first in 1980 and then again in 1983. Out in Taiwan, we have the Taiwan Missionary Conference, Taiwan Missionary Fellowship Conference in July of every year. And at that time, I was asked to conduct seminars and to give talks on this particular subject. The third is today's audience. Each audience has a different area of concern, and I hope today we can understand some of the problems of Australian MKs, especially the problems that they face on return to Australia. In bringing so much material together to focus on a relatively narrow field of study, it may give the impression of unreality, or that I'm overstating the case. Lest, by appearing to protest overmuch, I risk destroying the case, I should add that I have experienced some of the problems an MK faces on return to Australia, albeit it was 50 years ago. In fact, I've been an MK for over 60 years myself, and we have raised five MKs. I married an MK, and one of our children married an MK. So we've had quite a lot of personal experience in this field. I have listened to many missionary parents and observed some missionary kids. These may not be admissible as research conclusions, but I will take the liberty of using them as background material and illustrations, because what I'm speaking about are real things that have happened to real people. Now, I want to ask some questions. We start the seminar with an examination. How many dependent Australian MKs are listed by number, not by name, in the Tidings magazine? Can we separate them? Those under what we'll call the CMML, or Christian Missions in Many Lands, those from assemblies who are out in direct assembly missionary work. How many would be in that list? We're asked to pray for these in the in the prayer guide, aren't we? There are 61 in that list. That's in the June tidings. Under workers with other missions, how many do you think there would be? 39. And then workers with Australian Aborigines, 25. So that altogether, there are 125 children, perhaps under the age of 18 or so, listed in the missionary tidings. If we add to those who are not dependents of their parents now, but under the age of 30, how many do you think you could add? I suppose if you worked at it, you could probably find somewhere close to about 100. So that there would be, in the area of our concern, at least 200 children. How many missionaries are there in the world at the present time? Not Australian missionaries altogether. Somewhere about 60,000. And that would represent probably over 100,000 missionary children, say under the age of 16. And so that you can see that this is quite a large population of Christian concern. I'm not talking about this as the in the world at large, but for Christian concern. Now, what is an MK to you? Now, we say that in the tidings we have, by number, at least 125 children. Are they just sort of faceless non-persons? Could you fill in their vital statistics at all? Their birthday, their age, their sex, their school level, or if they've already left school, what employment are they following, or what special features are there which would require that we should be concerned about them to pray for them. Now, what is a missionary kid? I wonder if some of you could make suggestions as to what you think a missionary kid is. What would your definition be? A mixed up kid. A mixed culture kid. Well, it could be either, couldn't it? A mixed culture kid. In other words, it's a child who's had part of his life in one culture, part of his life in another, maybe several cultures. And so that is beginning now to give a little bit more defined shape to what a missionary child is. There are three terms that sociologists will use, and will adopt these terms in these lectures. The first is the TCK, or the third culture kid. Now, what do you think we mean by the third culture kid?
Product of two cultures.
The product of two cultures. All right, now let's attempt another definition here, shall we? And this, talking about the Australian third culture child, an Australian child who is brought up in another country, brought up in what we can call a host country. This is not the country of his citizenship, but the country where his family are working. But his social environment is with the expatriate community in that country, and they have been out there for at least 2 years, so that the influences of this expatriate community have a part in his thinking, in his life. So that it's an Australian child who goes to another country and is brought up in this host country, but his social environment is with the expatriate community within that country, and that he's there for at least 2 years of time. Now, we also speak of the OKs, which are overseas kids. In other words, from another point of view, you're looking at these children as those who have left or who are not in their country of their citizenship but have gone over to a foreign country. It's not necessarily to a country with a lower culture, because children who have gone from here to America and come back again often have quite considerable problems. Or those who have gone to European countries or over to the UK and then returned, they also can have problems of adjustment when they come back. Now, one group of the OKs will be the missionary kid. There are three other common groups among overseas children. Those who have gone out in diplomatic service, or whose parents are in diplomatic service, those who are on military assignment, those who are out for business, and then the fourth kind, those who are in Christian work, those who are children of missionaries. So that the MK is one kind of overseas child. Now, I mention this because some of the literature I hope later on we'll be able to get and introduce to you will speak more of the overseas child than of the missionary child. Now, some of you may ask, what is so special about the MK? What is so important about their problems that we should hold a seminar on the subject? Are not their problems simply the general problems of young people today? Let me answer the first two questions first. What is special and why is it important? The problems are not really new, but modern communications have made the collection of data and their analysis easier. The MK is part of one of the major dilemmas missionary families face. When the MKs reach teenage, the parents have to make a decision as to whether to stay on the field and send their children home for further education or for work, or on the other hand, to return to the homeland as a family, either terminating missionary work or temporarily leaving the field. A decision to leave the field gives those who are cost efficiency minded the shivers. The missionaries leave at an age, say 40 to 50 years old, and at a stage of experience which is the time of their optimum active involvement in missionary work. To those who decide to remain on the field and send their children home, there are many variables, such as the choice of a suitable home or place to live, the problem of financing the young person's further studies, the reports full of gloom and doom about our society, especially the young people's world, how to counsel and advise regarding church life, and the uncertain lines of communication between teenagers and their parents, even where there is a very warm family relationship. This dilemma is made more vexing by the feeling that people at home don't understand the problem and would find it almost impossible to see things through the eyes of a missionary. The parents are tossed from one horn to another because there is no absolute guideline, no set of criteria which can apply to every case. Missions that have legislated too tightly have sometimes aggravated the troubles they tried to solve. Many missions are, in effect, dealing with the problems more on an individual basis, and that, I believe, is much wiser. But don't missionary parents have the spirit of wisdom and understanding Have they not got the book as a guiding lamp? Have they not the right to cast their burden on the Lord in prayer? Will they not hear a voice behind them, giving them the signal to turn right or left? Yes, they have. And yet, sometimes the decisions seem to go wrong. There is no way, no sure way of predicting how an MK will turn out. And MKs are not statistics, they are people. Let's try to answer the third question. Are not the MK's problems the same as those of other young people? Yes, they are the same in a general way, but with particular differences, and these particular differences relate to the wider missionary enterprise. To study these may help us to know how to help other strangers, such as young people who come from our country towns to the unfamiliar life of our major cities, or the young people who have come from other countries either as students or immigrants. It may make us search our own hearts as to whether we know how to apply the gospel of reconciliation that we preach, or whether we practice the royal law we so easily praise in our songs. In this first lecture, I want to try to show what sort of person an MK is, and then to point up three special features which make them more peculiar than other of God's peculiar peoples in the KJV sense of the word. Expatriates leave their own country to live in a foreign country, which we will call the host country, as distinct from the home country. They do not intend to emigrate or to change their citizenship. The four main groups of people who live the expatriate life are, first, the person sent on the service of their own government in some form of diplomatic service; the second, persons assigned on a military mission whose commission and relationship with the host country are special to their role; the third are business persons whose motives for their venture and whose relationships with people in the host country are of still another order. The fourth is the missionary whose purpose in going to a foreign country is to make men and women believers in Jesus Christ, disciple to his commands, and followers of his way of life. Our concern is with the fourth group. The expatriates, after a short time in the host country, realize that their social life has become a mixture of the already learned social behavior of their home country and new social behavior learned from the host country. They can use knife and fork for their meals. They soon become skilled in using chopsticks. They can eat off Dalton ware or noritake or banana leaves. They can sit up at a table in chairs. They can sit cross-legged on a tatami floor, or they can squat on their haunches with their hosts around a cauldron on an open fire. It can all be right and normal, acceptable behavior, and a lot of pleasure too. If several expatriates live together in a town or city, they will tend to form a third community. It borrows from the home countries of the participants. It also borrows from the host country, but it becomes modified by the expatriates themselves. In this way, they have transformed themselves into participants of a third culture community. That is, they have taken something from the Australian way of life. They've added to it something from the missionary country where they're working, and then they themselves have modified their behavior, their social interactions, because they can't be absolutely Australian in a foreign country, nor is it really easy for them to completely adopt the foreign ways of life. Just to make an illustration here, We know that in the early days, the China Inland Mission made a great principle of dressing the way the Chinese dressed, living the way they live. And even to the extent of having a pigtail, the men having a pigtail, a queue, which they wore. Now today I'm wearing Chinese dress. These cultural things change. But if I were to hark back to what we think is Chinese, I'd be making a caricature. It wouldn't be a cultural adaptation, would it? It would be a little bit of play acting and not real. Well, the third community finds that they can't be totally Australian, nor can they make such changes in their way of life that they can become totally integrated into the life of the community of where they're living. Then, with the different cultural groups, because, say, for instance, in Taichung City, we have a large number of people from America, some from England, some from Finland, some from Norway, a few Germans, and there have been, in time past, some Australians as well. Quite a number of different host countries, but when they get together, they modify one another's behaviour so that they form a third culture community. Now this term, third culture, is generic and not specific. This, of course, is because expatriates have brought their own home country culture with variations of style, customs and languages into the third culture. Then, as social interaction takes place, the third culture develops its own character of home life, social activities and entertainment. Where children are found, education becomes a part of a community life, and to some degree, religious life will also develop. These cultural interactions are part of people's mechanisms of survival in a foreign land, and they do, interestingly enough, strengthen the sense of loyalty to their home country. It does not mean that they feel they have to go back to their home country. They hang their harp in the willow trees, but they stay in the shade of the willows rather than return to the sycamore trees. Now, for those who are older, you'll realize what I'm referring to. Those who are younger might think it's from a pop song, but it isn't. This explains their parents. But what of the missionary kid? Dr. Ted Ward, with a wider perspective, speaks of overseas kids, but our subject is the MK, or the missionary kid. The missionary kids may have been born in the third culture community, or from an early age they have been raised in the third culture community, and to them this is home. Their parents' home country is their fantasy land. The third culture community is their real home, where they feel they belong and where they feel secure. This security is based on the fact that this is the place where they live their family life, their school life, their social life and their spiritual life. If I may give an illustration here from my own experience, even while I was in university, 5 or 6 years after leaving home, I would take fantasy tours, a journey by ship down the coast of China, or I'd replay the journey from Kunming to our 50-home village, 2.5 journeys by road, sometimes walking, sometimes riding a mountain pony. The smoke-filled inns we stopped in, the cobbled roads that followed a swift-flowing river, the bloodstain across the highway, the mule trains, the climb up the mountains, and then, just as we got near home, a cooey, which Father had imported, that echoed in the mountains, and at last we got home. And I could take that journey just going down memory lane. And I often took it because it was home out there. Together, these have made for them a complete and happy cultural environment. Just how deeply they are involved emotionally or spiritually, they probably don't realize themselves. After all, what cultural needs What cultural needs does a child have that a loving family, enterprising teachers, talented friends, and highly motivated spiritual counselors will not supply? Add to that many extras from the host country and the crowning cultural gift from God, a lively imagination. And culturally, a child is made. Correct that, not made, but is in the making. As they grow into their teens, they cope with their inner turbulences in an environment which generally is supportive, but which has boundaries to and standards of behavior that differ somewhat from those in their home country. Emotional interrelationships develop in a narrower and deeper field rather than in the wider and shallower community life at home. One moment they can stand daring, like Lord Nelson on the bridge of HMS Victory. Next moment they huddle like Jonah in the hold of the ship. They can do this because in the third culture community there is a special comradeship that allows them to have their high points and low points within the context of tested safety. Our Australian MKs, except in the New Guinea mission field, will probably have a set of problems that do not become apparent until they return to Australia. On most mission fields, missionaries from the USA are in the majority. In some areas, those from the UK predominate. This means that the larger missionary schools are English or American. Supposing they're American, social life, sports, and other cultural activities are American. Church life is also influenced by the American style. The Americans usually work at their culture as well as at their careers. And in both areas, they will influence other people. I don't know that there is anything in Australian culture that compels the attention or inspires the hopes of other people. What is Australian culture? To sing Waltzing Matilda, knock off a few beers, tell a few tall yarns, and boast about our kangaroos and mateship and the largest rock in the world? What is Australian culture? Our Australian missionary kid is a fourth culture kid. Not third culture, but a fourth culture kid. And the Australian component is certainly not his strongest. Our own family were Australians by nationality. They lived in Taiwan in a third culture community that was predominantly American. They were Australian by nationality, American by culture, with strong sympathies for the Republic of China. When they came back to Australia, they were foreigners, but not recognized as such in school or in church or in social groups, nor, I confess, by their parents. We didn't understand that fundamentally, children who return from a third culture community back to Australia, their home is out there and they're foreigners coming back here. If MKs return before the ninth year of schooling, their foreignness is more quickly thrown off. After that time, their learned cultural behavior has struck deeper roots. I'm not suggesting that these roots should be grubbed out. I'm simply saying that they feel like foreigners longer than many people would expect. Now, we want to spend some time dealing with features of missionary life which affect their children. There are three features of missionary life, which is one form of expatriate life or of overseas life, which can have an influence on the missionary life. The first is the transiency of the missionary assignment. The second, privileged high status within the host country. And thirdly, their cultural roots. The transiency of the missionary assignment. Although missionaries go to the mission field on assignment by Christ, they are sent there by churches or missionary societies of their home country. Their term of service may be affected by financial considerations or policy changes. In many countries, the government of the host country requires the sponsorship of a church or society in the host country, together with a guarantee that the missionary will not be a liability to the host country financially, that he will keep its laws and avoid involvement in the politics of the country. Herein are possible reasons for unexpected changes in their term of service. We have known of a missionary who actively participated in a political movement which was in opposition to the government. When his participation was established as unlawful, he and his family left the country within 24 hours. A second missionary had the sponsorship of a church withdrawn just over a personal grievance, and his furlough turned out to be his retirement from that field of work. In other countries, there may be civil war or international war, which has led to their sudden withdrawal from their country. And all these things add up to the fact that missionary life, even if it may be for a long time, is certainly not a permanent situation. The assignment may be as a career missionary, when missionaries expect to serve for the term of their natural life. But when the time for retirement comes, that's the start of their unnatural life, they will return to their home country. Even if the time is long, there is still an underlying feeling of transiency. On the field, they are unlikely to own their own home, and they may be designated to different centres of work. Furloughs and study leaves are further reminders that they are only temporary residents in the host country. For short-term missionaries, there is no sense of permanency at all. Now, how does this affect the missionary child? MKs who are born on the field or raised from early childhood there look on the third culture community as their home. For them, furlough is more of a problem since it dislocates their normal pattern of life. This is true also of the MK who has to go to boarding school. For them, life on the mission field is all of a kind, and they feel far less a foreigner in a foreign country than they feel back in their home country. For those who are troubled about MKs having to go to boarding school, I would like to make some observations. Dr. Danielson makes a strong and, I believe, good case for Christian boarding schools. He answers those who say that it is the parents' own duty to bring up their children and train them for the Lord by saying that that does not mean that the missionary school cannot be a part of God's plan for the training of the MK. Parents do not abdicate their responsibility to the school. And in the ways of thinking nowadays, those in charge of missionary schools are doing all they can to involve the parents in activities in the school so that the parents do not feel that the school has taken over their responsibility. On the other hand, they don't want their children to feel that their parents have abdicated responsibility. On the other hand, the teachers in a good missionary school serve the Lord and serve in this way for the good of the whole missionary program, and they bring a surprising amount of talent into the community life of the students. I would venture the opinion that a Christian boarding school may be a more acceptable alternative for the teenager than return of the family to the home country if that were the only reason for their return. It is an area that needs research. What are the results to the MK? First, if parents are on the field and the MK goes to boarding school, what would be the result if parents stay on the mission field and the MK goes to boarding school at home? Or thirdly, what would be the result of the MK if parents go home and the MK goes home? I'm not answering these. I'm only just throwing them out so that you can think about them, because these things I don't think have been thought through very clearly, except on perhaps a personal basis. But I think that in talking about missionaries, we're talking about things that involve churches as well as the individual missionaries. It was considered acceptable in the CIM school, Chifu school, for the MK to stay at Chifu while his parents took furlough. Even now, some US kids will prefer to stay at their mission school while their parents go on home leave, because they cope better in a known context than in a strange one. Now, to support that particular statement, which was written before we left Taiwan, while we were in the Philippines, we met Mr. and Mrs. Parsons, who are teaching in the Faith Academy out in Manila. They told us that last week they were to go over to India to see a niece who was graduating from the Woodstock School in North India. She's the daughter of missionaries from Vancouver, Mr. and Mrs. Mackey. She elected to stay out in India while her parents left the field to go home. To stay out in India to finish her time of to finish her education, her last year in high school out in India, rather than to go back to high school and finish back in the States. An interesting point, isn't it? What I say now is like sweet and sour, but altogether without bitterness. When a missionary family leaves the field, you do not necessarily have to take the stated reason as at face value. It may be a mask and not his face at all. He may be trying to save your face. I wonder if you, who are leaders of an assembly with workers commended to the mission field, have ever inquired of your missionary what the costs of missionary education are. What is the cost of the school or tuition fees? What are the fees, say, for boarding school? Out in the Morrison Academy in Taiwan, Taichung, where we are, the fees are quite high. They're not the highest in the world, but they must be getting up that way. For a primary school child, I believe the fees are now up to $1,500 US a year, just for tuition fees. For those in high school, it will be as high as $1,800 US a year. Faith Academy, running on slightly different lines, has lower fees, and there must be quite a variation in the fee structure in the different schools. I do not recall in 20 years of educating our family one inquiry from our home state regarding the costs of education. Once Margot, speaking with a very missionary-minded sister, spoke of this. The response was, if it is as expensive as that, you could come home. Our reaction was that if that is the way people are thinking, we would be wise not to mention the matter. Well, is that cunning-wise or spiritual-wise? Now, the second point, privileged high status within the host country. It is generally true that the expatriate's life in the host country is made attractive by the status they have due to their assignment and the courtesy shown them by their peers in the host country. The status usually carries certain privileges in housing, transport, and expatriate allowance. MKs may feel that their parents are as well qualified as those on diplomatic, military, or business assignments, but the status and privileges are comparatively low. Well, this is a learning experience and a testing experience for the MK. Even between missions and missionaries, there are maneuvers for status. But that is a game for the parents, and the real winner only gets a towel and a basin of water. It was truer of earlier days of missionary endeavor that missionaries were the leaders and their lifestyle was higher than most people in their Christian community. Things are not quite the same now. Privileges that were cultural and due to their imported lifestyle and needs no longer stand out as privileges in the more developed of developing nations. Concepts of leadership, authority, responsibility, and even the validity of the missionary presence are changing. For years, people at home have wondered if the day of foreign missions is over. Our missionary is not playing Joshua and making the day draw out longer and longer. In this day of missionary enterprise, unless we give these key words, leadership, authority, responsibility and validity, their value in the cultural heritage of the kingdom of God, we become uneasy in our minds, uncertain in our plans and ineffectual in our work. Yet, of course, missionaries somehow or other get involved in the front line of Christian activity. It's the nature of the beast, and the beasts are not given to dying out. I've always enjoyed the comment of Dixon Host, who for many years was director of the CIM, but it was in his earlier days on the mission field when he worked alongside Pastor Xi, whose book many of you may have read. It was a difficult assignment. Pastor Xi was a very determined man, and it must have been very difficult for a man who had all the qualities of leadership that Dixon Host had to work along another man who also had qualities of leadership. Dixon Host said that it seemed as if the missionary should be like the cocks in a rowing eight, guiding by very light movement of the rudder. What he didn't add, I don't know whether he was nasty enough even to think of this, was that the cox is the only one in the boat that faces the direction the crew should be going. Sometimes the missionary has insights about what should be done and the direction things should be going, but is unable to be too particular about it for fear of tipping the boat over. I don't know how much these things affect missionary kids or whether they even care about them. They have their own area of struggle for status and its privileges among their peers in their school and social life. They may sometimes wonder if their parents got their full quota of marbles when they were issued, but impressions formed in the third culture life probably only become meaningful when they are back in their home country. Then perspectives sharpen, values strengthen. Cultural values of the kingdom of God are truer and more abiding. This is often part of their own call later on to missionary work. Now the third and very important thing is the matter of cultural roots. Expatriates or third culture participants strike roots in the cultural environment where they live. A good illustration is to say that they develop like a banyan tree. Their main trunk and roots were in the home country, but now they have moved to another country. Culturally, they strike new roots in the third culture. Like the banyan tree, sending down roots from its branches into the soil immediately below. If later on they return to the home country, because that too has had changes in its culture, they put down new roots in the present day cultural environment. By moving from one place to another then, in order that they can survive and work and be useful and fruitful, then they have to put down new roots wherever they move. Roots are the system that draws the nourishment out of the soil, conducting it through the plant. Because of its roots, the plant lives and grows, and where there is a good root system, the plant can resist drought and heat. Because of it, the plant can fulfill God's creative purpose for fruitfulness, which pleases God and refreshes others. A good root system is also very important to the stability of the plant. For MKs who are born or raised from young childhood in the host country, the main trunk root system is not the culture of their parents' home country, but the third culture community. The formative influences of their lives there will to a greater or lesser degree remain with them through life. They may change their place of living and work. They are always changing. This is one feature about missionary kids which I think we need always to keep in mind. They're always changing. Their life is summed up in one of Howard Kank's most quotable phrases: it's just a solid state of flux. The four main soil root systems for our MK are the same as for any other young person.
Please turn the tape over at this point.
The four main soil root systems for our MK are the same as for any other young person: family life, school life, social life, and church life. The quality of soil is important to a young person's growth. Our concern is to see how these things affect the missionary kid. First of all, regarding family life. Because of the transient nature of their parents' life, MKs are like nomads. And for a nomad, family is all the capital he has. Underline that in your minds. To a missionary kid, ultimately, family is the most important thing. It is the capital that he has. Family for the MK consists of parents, brothers and sisters as the inner circle. Then there is the extended family, the missionary courtesy uncles and aunts who fill these roles conscientiously. They become very close to the young people. Their interest is often very deep. Their affection is very real. And they play a great part in the development of the young people. The MK's friends are much like cousins, with bonds of loyalty and friendship that are very supportive. There are the same joys and problems of the parent-child relationship on the mission field as at home. Perhaps missionary parents are, as a group, more possessive, more ambitious for their children, more sensitive to their needs than at home. But generalizations are not always true of all cases. And missionaries, themselves highly motivated, find that the missionary Joneses are hard to keep up with. Missionary parents have a commission from God, the charge of a family, and the care of church work. Are these three separate compartments of responsibility, or are they three areas in one compartment? Are they equally important? Their commission from God, the charge of a family, and the care of church work. Are they mutually antagonistic? But that's, of course, the parents' problem. MKs go through the normal stages of development, through the bonding stage to the marsupial pouch, from the marsupial pouch to the limits of the parents' wingspread. Then they shuffle between the home and the peers of the herd, venturing in independence but never out of the sound of the cowbell. Then comes the day when, ready or not, they have to make decisions and act on them. They return to the home country, excited and terrified. They are coming home. No. They are foreigners, for they are leaving home. Family life has the strongest emotional ties for the MK. How does the disciples' cross affect the family life? There is only one answer I dare to offer: each to each his own cross. MKs have, in the context of their own lives, to learn discipleship. The fellows, as well as the girls, will dissolve in tears discreetly at night. Loneliness, memories. The cross tests out their emotions too. Family was soundly invested capital after all. With regard to school life, family may be the strongest emotional link, but school is probably the main sphere for development of character. MKs study under a wide range of teachers, men and women who are motivated by a call from God to teach, to be dorm parents, or to serve in administration. Some of these teachers leave lifelong impressions for good in the personalities and aspirations of the MKs. Some of necessity were God's servants, agents of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. How true. These things were, of course, quite as important to development of an MK's character as the educational facilities. Most mission schools, especially the American schools, have surprisingly good facilities, and they make good use of what they have. Australian MKs are often one of the smallest subgroups in the third culture community. They may, perhaps in a school of 600, you may have less than 10 Australians, so that they are very much of a minority group in that environment. That means that the school, for various reasons, is not able to give them all the time and all the benefit, all the education that is necessary for an Australian child to develop as an Australian. The school is strongly orientated to needs of American or British children. They receive an education with, say, American thinking, American interpretation of history, American cultural behavior. We are not concerned with differences of quality here, but with differences in kind. It leads to a misspelt youth rather than a misspent youth. A second problem is that their financial charges may be very high and difficult for an Australian family to meet. Their reasons are valid. They have set up a private school. They believe that they should do it well. High standards carry high costs. They are a mission project. Should they be required to make special concessions to another mission? Alternatives, such as correspondence courses or missionary ACE systems, may save in fees, but cause loss in social interaction with other young people. A third problem is the effect of the American system on Australian MKs. Should they come to Australia for tertiary education? Should they go to the United States to continue their studies in that stream? If they should change systems, at what age or standard of schooling should they return to Australia? I'm not answering the questions. I hope that perhaps some of you will be able to discuss these in the discussion time that follows. I would like to add one thing here. What is the Commending Assembly's responsibility with regard to education of an MK on the field? What is its responsibility with regard to sharing the burden of decision as to whether to return or not? And the third thing, what is the Commending Assembly's responsibility to guidance of the parents or of the MK after their return? The third root system is the social life. The third soil root system, social life, is usually very adequately provided on the mission field. Sports, cultural programs, outdoor activities, mountain climbing and camps are a few of the extras provided. Music programs are usually very good. In fact, you begin to wonder how children of missionaries who work hard to wheeze a tune out of a portable organ can combine their talents to make an orchestra or band that plays real music. MKs take part in most activities. The peer group is a close-knit herd, but it means MKs are included in everything on the field. When they return, they find they don't belong to anything. They weren't missed. And if they don't attend something, they aren't missed. They aren't urged to take part. They then may thresh around for something to belong to, or they withdraw because no one tries to include them in any group. If they have been in an American school where people go out of their way to be friendly, their return to Australia can be a very lonely experience. The vast outback spaces are in their hearts. It's quite the normal thing for the MK to take part in every sport activity. They learn to play soccer, basketball, volleyball, baseball, or in the English schools, cricket, tennis, swimming, each in its season. Often they will also take part in the music and drama programs in the school. The point we're making here is that on the mission field, a missionary kid is encouraged to take part in everything, and given an opportunity to do so, he is encouraged to belong to a team, a club, or a band. With regard to church life, the fourth soil root system is church life. It is common now for many missions to overlap in the mission field. Missionaries even form friendships with folk they wouldn't be seen fellowshipping with in the home country. MKs have a sort of flag-waving loyalty to their parents' mission or church, but in the third culture community they are unashamedly ecumenical. Larger communities will usually have a community church using English where they enjoy Christian fellowship without confrontation on denominational lines. For their parents' sake, the MKs can then, in addition to that, go to the mission church to break bread in the appointed way, or to speak in tongues, or to baptize in the approved depth of water. The community church fellowship is usually warm, caring, interested in people, inviting participation in musical ministry and in witness. The MK has the benefit of the spiritual atmosphere, and it may be a very positive and helpful experience. Most of the school friends go to the church, and its mutual caring makes going to church a cultural as well as a spiritual experience. Is that a strange thought? It's a cultural as well as spiritual. We don't usually think of going to church quite that way, do we? That the social interactions are an important part of church fellowship, as well as the listening to the Word of God itself. This is probably truer of our Australian assembly life than we would like to admit, but it is not such a wrong thing. We could benefit by cultivating it. For Australian MKs, on returning to their home country, really they are foreigners coming to their parents' home country. They need to find a new soil for their church life roots, congenial soil. After all, they are only young people, young Christians. True, they've had the advantage of a warm fellowship, the shelter of dedicated Bible teaching, witnessing, and pastoring Christians. I believe in the communion of saints. But what kind of worm got into the gourd so that church life seemed to wither overnight? Move over, Jonah. Are all Australian churches part of the sunburnt country too? Now we have time for you to ask questions or to answer questions, to comment on things that you've heard.
Going back to originally, what some of the original things you said about caricature, in some ways, as you get further out in the city, cultures do tend to get less cosmopolitan, while there's the image, the caricature of Australian. I think there tends to be that in other countries too, and MKs are aware of the implications behind that. We found with our children, they've reacted strongly to people, Australians' ignorance of what's behind some of those caricatures. Perhaps it's a little bit like we accept comments by Australians about the Australian caricature, but we tend to be defensive or react if some one foreigner makes comments about the Australian caricature. And we found that our children have reacted to errors and ignorance by teachers or people who they feel should know better about the other culture. They make comments and at times too tended to look to make those mistakes and not accept that the children might know more about the country that they have lived in. And perhaps is one thing that people could learn to realise that these children do know a lot about the countries they live in.
That's true. Yes.
What are practical ways missionary parents should prepare their children for A, coming home on furlough, or secondly, B, coming home for good?
Well, let's see if you can answer, some of you answer these questions.
Once again, I might jump in. A lot of issues that children face, missionaries face, both on the field and coming home, are very often parochial issues, and you take a big jump coming back to know what's in the local newspaper, how the local football team's going. Things, the newspapers here are very large, particularly the popular newspapers, are very largely deal with Australian things, they're all in the headlines, all the news. For the MKs, it's all, well, a lot of local things too, are the things that are most prominent. So there needs to be a bit of sharing of news and items of current local interest.
Yes.
It's very difficult to prepare children because they can't project themselves into a country they don't know much about, which has just been a fantasy country. But I think the warmth of the family is probably one of the main things. And the second thing is that the children have to see Christianity in the home as it's preached, because when they come home they'll find that some of the things that you've been saying, people are not interested in them, and the bottom falls out of things. If they know what true Christianity as their parents have lived it is, and what it means in the home, how the Lord provides all their needs, I think that while they might have a period of difficulty and unrest and maybe even rebellion, I think they will have that to come back to later on.
Good. Would you say it has anything to do with the age of the child, what you can do in the way of preparation or need to do?
It's a very good idea. Some people might think if they can come home a little while before a school term starts to at least orientate a little rather than straight in. We had a family stay with us once and they came 3 days before the school year started, and the child, as well as having to go to a new high school, was marched along the streets in an ordinary Sunday school Panama hat because the parents had had no time to mainly get an idea of how a child must conform, and also they have not had time to shop or to perhaps afford that item of clothing. So that child not only had that future justice, but it was also ridiculed for having to wear what the parents had thought would be quite suitable. And I felt, even that long time ago, that they had come home at the beginning of that long school holiday, maybe they would have
adjusted
a little bit quicker. It's very
important
for the children.
Perhaps the missionaries should have slides or photos of their home country as if they wrote home and asked of what's going on in the country at that particular time, so that they prepared them for a little bit of what's going on in the actual country. Because when you get even visiting a country, you get a bit of a shock to find out what's going on. But if you've read about it and you've seen pictures of it, well then, you know, you've got more of an idea of what it was.
The thing I'm suggesting is that perhaps it's
the assembly's responsibility perhaps to send out, and now missionary children are coming home, or even missionaries on furlough, to send something current so that they know what's going on in the country.
May I get you a question? How many children will read a book, especially in Australia?
Yeah, well, I know that, I realise that. But if you send it to the parents so they can at least update the children on what they're going to find in the country.
Speaking personally, at the time you're leaving, you're more concerned with saying your farewells than you are preparing to come back.
Don, aren't we not really talking about what's happened is a pattern of possible rejection that the child is going to face when they come back? So what we really need to be thinking about is how are we going to prepare them for the inevitable rejection which will come. When rejection comes and everywhere in life, what we really need to be thinking about is how to prepare that child to handle that rejection that's coming.
Yes, I think the following two lectures will probably help a little bit in that direction.
I think that's true too, because when I first came over to Australia, I didn't care if I didn't conform. Like, if you had told me everything the way other kids were, I just wouldn't have cared, I wouldn't have conformed anyway. And being different, kids were rejected. So, you know, and I didn't care about that, and I got rejected by people, but I think that's the main thing, you know, you can tell people everything that's going on, tell them what all the trendy clothes are and all the in things at the moment, but if you don't want to conform, then you're going to be rejected anyway. It's the same with any Christian, I think.
Look, she speaks Australian now.
Done well.
Possibly, in a practical sense, wouldn't it be feasible for the missionary parents to write home to their local church and prepare possibly a couple of the members there to nurture and to take a special interest in the children when they come home? Like, introduce them to families whereby their sons play soccer, their daughters play netball, and invite these missionary kids to join their team? That's right. Of course, you said they're not encouraged or urged to take part in sports or even social activities when they come home. So possibly preparation begins with the missionary parents and the local church organising something there.
Any comments on that?
So a lot of the comments have been designed about what we ought to do with the kids. I think most of them would be wanting to feel fairly independent and wouldn't want to be smothered with a lot of offers from other people, and would like to find their own feet in their own time. And if you coordinate your church to rush them with various offers, that's an unnatural reaction that's going to inevitably fade away. We do the right thing for the first month, and then forget about them. So I would think that it's much better not to present them with an unreal situation, but to let them find their own place in their own time. Otherwise you're going to con them, saying Australia's like this, and it's not. They won't care about them in 3 months' time.
Hardly disagree with that, because the children have left a warm, tightly knit community. And I know when our children came home, they found the difficult thing was to break into the other peer group. Everybody was very nice to them in a way, but they didn't belong. And I think it's essential that people are there, even if it's unnatural and even if it's going to stop. They've got to be made to feel wanted, and they've got to be assimilated.
Let it stop after 6 months, doesn't matter, but give it to them at first when they badly need it. Given the education of the missionary grandma, I think it's essential that the commanding assembly, who will know that the missionary lay that foundation from the very beginning and keep up that regular contact and giving and loving throughout the year, and not especially some sudden thing that comes near the time when they try to return.
So the feeling, your feeling is not just just at the time of their coming back, but it should be the ongoing thing in all the time that they're away as well as they're coming back.
I would second that strongly, that you can't do these things in the short term. You've got to look at them in the longer term in preparation. They do need, as trees need time to grow, plants need time to grow, you need to prepare these things early. Also, just on this, I've got a couple of books here that were produced by APCM for missionary parents and for foster parents, not so much for the children themselves, but for preparing the parents and possible foster parents. So they're available if anyone wants to look at them, and I'm sure they would be available from the mission if anyone's interested in that. It's more preparing the parents for this sort of adjustment.
ACPM. Wonder if you could sort of leave them on the table, and people can look at them and see. Yes.
One major problem in all this: the people who live in Australia never really understand the culture living overseas. When a child comes home, he has habits that are different, culture things are different, and I know that my oldest daughter. My mother was always correcting her because she thought she was doing the wrong thing, and yet she wasn't really, she was doing the way she'd been brought up. And it's very difficult for a person living in Australia to really understand the true culture. It's just something you have to learn as you live with the child and they come home. And her grandma was very good to her, but she always thought she was doing the wrong thing. And I just didn't understand the culture.
I feel too that children, when they first come home, particularly if they've gone to a mission school and been taught English, as in Pommy English, they come home with a very English accent, and they say, "We're Australian, I was born here," and they get belted up day after day by the other Australian kids because they're trying to be something that they're not. That happened to our son when he went to a local high school. He was belted up by other kids because he had an English accent and claimed to be Australian. They said, you're not, you're lying. And that made it very difficult for him even to want to be in Australia.
We had experience with the Gould family who came to our family camp at Christmas time. The boys and the girls of that family, they spoke an Oxford accent, you see. And of course, a certain amount of fun, and being Australian, the Australians always rubbish people. They get a great deal of fun out of rubbishing each other. That's part of their culture, you see. But the Gould children, they enjoyed it anyway, just the same. They were really good sports. And it didn't seem to trouble them very much at all. They were quite outgoing.
There's a problem, John, I found out over the years, and that is when missionaries are returning, both the parents and the children are forgotten in one sense by the assemblies. Not so much in other countries. In America, there's much provision for that. I'm referring to the rehabilitation as far as clothing is concerned. They're coming from hot countries, and they're coming into winter here, and there's a great deal of expense involved in dressing their kids up to suit the place and the school. They won't come under ridicule there. In America, they've got about 50 miles out from New York on the turnpike, a very big building to rehabilitate families and clothing and other things. We don't have that, but I have had the privilege of helping someone. One missionary said to me here, you know, Edward, that has been a big difficulty in getting provision for clothes. So I think the assemblies could think about that. It helps both missionary parents and the children.
We found there was a huge difference between furloughs and actually coming back to settle permanently. And the children we found were made a great fuss of when we were on furloughs. We did a lot of travelling and going from place to place, and I think
the children got rather spoiled as a matter of fact, but then once you come down and finish, you're just part of the everyday scenery, and it's such a contrast for them. That must be hard to accept at the beginning.
When I came back from India to Australia,
Doctor, I realised the accent problem. Undoubtedly, the children have it.
up to the age of 15, within 6 to 12 months they will change it. But the adult, can I do some quite good questions?
For relatives and friends and family to encourage the missionary kids to talk about their home, where they came from. I remember when I came back in primary school, I used to talk about it to friends my own age, and the number of people that believed me upset me, and I think caused me to go into a sort of a shell about my homeland.
I just wonder if technology has played a significant role in all of this. The missionaries of 50 years ago would have travelled to and from the field by ship, providing that 4 weeks or 5 weeks travelling time and the acclimatisation of a new culture going both ways. Today, modern aircraft transport from one culture to the other so quickly that that has compounded the problem. Looking to the future, perhaps the advent of global television may tend to make more available the mores of different societies available to missionary children from different parts of the world.
These six things all have a relationship, definitely.
I think also, Don, you've got to consider that people at home should realise that even the missionaries themselves, once their children are coming back, in a loss situation, a bereavement situation, they're losing something which they hold dearly, and they've got to settle back. And in loss and bereavement, it may take years for those things to be worked through. That has to be understood by those who are counselling them. I'm saying that's the problem, isn't it? That's a big problem with our assemblies in the pastoral counselling area. Incompetence and inability, usually not present at all.
I've been very thoughtful about the statement that you made, that going to church is a cultural as well as a spiritual experience. And I suppose we all would agree that it's inevitable that there'll be a certain cultural experience going to church here for our kids and for ourselves. But as I think back, I think one of the things I could have done more of would have been to explain the cultural component of the church and the things that we did as against the spiritual. Because there is a certain pressure to conform coming to church in the cultural way to a point where it's likely the kid will miss the spiritual content because it's a new experience and a new culture, and therefore the kid is adapting to a new, if you like, spiritual cultural thing in the church. And I think that we could have spent more time explaining what was cultural but what was really just spiritual. And I think that there's a lot of food for thought for us all to maybe keep this in mind in future, that we our going to church will be less and less a cultural thing and more a spiritual thing.
And it ties to the American way of life, of course, in an American college. And American church life is a part of the culture for very, very many Americans. And I take Brother Saxby's point there as a very good one. And I would add it would be extremely difficult exercise to look at the American situation and to puzzle out just why it is so different. It's inbuilt in their way of thinking for generations. It's important, though. I was impressed by what you said about that, and it did seem to me to hold
some valuable clues, especially if you did add that you might have 10 Australian children out of 600 at such a school, and so it becomes part of their culture.
I wasn't sure what Richard was saying. I didn't know whether he was trying to be polite and say that in Africa it was cultural and spiritual, and when you come back to Australia it's just cultural and not spiritual. or whether and he was saying that maybe I simply ought to try and have a bit more spiritual, so that there is a link between the two places, so that it's not just a culture shock, there is something constant. I don't know whether you've been trying to be perfectly polite, Richard, or are you saying something else?
You'll have to explain yourself.
I'll see you after.
One important problem that we faced coming home from Mission Park Field was that we felt very, very insecure. You didn't know if you were going to go into employment, if there was employment there, you didn't have a bank balance. Overall, you were feeling insecure, or we were, I was. Let's narrow it down to that. That obviously flows onto your children, which of course must make their kind of adjustment much more difficult. So even coming home on furlough, Mrs. McNaught made the point, and I think it's one of the most important points that's been made this morning, of family warmth and security. And yet even on a furlough, let alone coming home for good, that family warmth and security is it comes under a lot of pressure. Perhaps if I was doing it again, we'd understand that, but certainly at the time we did not understand the significance of just that aspect of coming home and the impact that it made upon family.
I feel that the children take on the attitudes of the parents when they are coming home on furlough, and when they finally come home. Fortunately, we never did finally come home. We're still on furlough. We've always had the same attitude. We just didn't go back. But the children have naturally taken our attitudes, and when we came home on furlough, we were coming home, and we treated Australia as home then, even, and visited our relations and so on. And it was no different when we finally came Finnish. Finnish is a New Guinea word, by the way, it's not cultural here.
Yes, I'm wondering if it doesn't point to the home assemblies not being very supportive from the time they send somebody out. It seems to me that there ought to be children who can keep in touch with children of missionary parents and missionary children, and there ought to be that communication right from the start, and we're failing in really communicating as an assembly with those on the field.
Doesn't happen at home, how will it ever happen overseas, I don't know.
Well, if we're sending out a person out, I really think we have a responsibility that we haven't fulfilled if we're not in some way remembering their children's birthdays. I mean, even if one person is in the assembly, at least you'd be doing something. What about the children in the assembly? Why can't we encourage them to write to somebody their own age and do something about keeping in contact with them, so that they know what's going on? They take a photo of each other. They know what they look like in their dress in Taiwan and we look like in Australia. There's not that sort of communication. Has anyone ever found that when they were overseas?
The only person I remember is Miss Idell.
Yes.
Miss Idell. She never failed to remember a birthday. I can't remember. I'm not sure if I even met her. All I know is that every birthday, and we always went to the post box. We didn't. The aunts and uncles usually wrote to Mum and Dad. They were the Australian aunts and uncles, but it was always Miss Ardell who wrote to the kids a card. Never failed.
She used to be
and a greetings card here. A greetings card here at Christmas. She still does.
She still does.
Because I think it's very easy for the children to feel that the home church is the home church of the parents, and that it's not their home church. And I think we all feel that there is much that the home church or assembly can do to support a missionary family going on. I agree that there needs to be that involvement right across the whole level of the home church, and an ongoing one. If your children have got that sense of belonging, then it's much easier when they come back.
The remaining comments from this session have been put on the end of tape number 2.